welcome to episode 28 of the School Improvement Podcast Series. This is Mark Westerberg. Today's episode is a fairly short one, but it's going to be about trying to incentivize students to do well on standardized tests. You know, they have to take these. They don't have a choice. They tend not to be motivated, especially in the secondary level, because what's in it for me? They don't really care what our report card looks like. And there's a little bit of gamesmanship you need to do to help motivate some of those students to do well. And so I'm going to give you a list of things that I've tried in the past and we currently do that seem to work. So it's spring testing season, so I thought this would be an appropriate topic. So sit back and listen to episode 28 of School Improvement. This is Mark Westerberg. So every school in the nation is required in grades 3 through 8 to give standardized tests. All the states require math and English. Some have additional science that's done at about 3 different grade levels, and even fewer have a social studies state assessment. But state assessments are a commonplace thing. If you are a public entity or take public dollars, you have to have standardized tests that your students are graded on their performance, which in fact grades your building. So standardized tests happen in every state, sometimes at differing grade levels, but math and language arts is required K-8, and there has to be a secondary one. Generally speaking, they are at 10th or 11th grade. Just like any test, one of the keys to keep kids motivated and doing well is to prepare them well. Students do well on tests they're prepared for. If they're really prepared, it won't seem as burdensome and they'll do better. In short, those are reasons why folks use trimesters, where they front-load curriculum during 3 trimesters in a year to get students more test ready. It's why they put in ACT prep classes. It's why they front-load curriculum. For example, make sure they have plane and coordinate geography before the state test because it doesn't care about proof and theorem geometry. All of these topics I've kind of touched on before, but clearly one of the best incentives is to prepare your kids well for the test. So that means your instruction matches similar things to the test. You give them sample questions. You have questions that are similar to those that are on standardized tests. You use the same format. You use a computer instructional testing method if that's what your state uses. If you have ACT as a test or SAT, you give them a language arts test that sometimes the discriminator will say no change in language arts because that's what they're going to see. So the more you make your classroom assessment replicate what goes on in state assessments, the better off you're going to be. And again, the more prepared they are, the more likely they are to do better. Pretty simple. So I'm going to rant here for a little bit. I hear folks all the time say things like, well, that test doesn't really matter. It's a one-day test. It really doesn't tell us anything. You know, the only people who say that are people with low test scores. I never hear anybody with good test scores say they don't matter. The truth is, they do matter. They are important. They are something that you're going to be graded on and assess that, not only as a district that you put in your local paper, but there are national websites like Niche and Great Schools and World News and Report where they put your test scores in there. People looking to move to your community or attend your schools, look at that data. They are important. They need to be a focus. And your district should be on a continuous improvement plan to make them better. Of course, they're not the only thing. Half of our job is to graduate kids who have good, knowledge-based, well-rounded education and who are also good citizens and know how to interact with others. But let's not act like the test doesn't mean anything and it's not important. They are important. And we need to make them important for folks who don't even teach the core subjects. We need to make sure that all of our elective teachers understand when they go to the grocery store, their report card on the school is not coming from the woodshop class or the art class. It's coming from how do your kids perform on state standardized tests compared to others. It's important for all of us, and we need to act accordingly. Another thing we need to really prepare is we need to make sure the testing environment is conducive to students. Turning the bells off, not having noise. I prefer taking students off-site to a different location, make it completely different, create an experience that shows them you're vested in this enough to take them off-site and make it a quality testing environment for them. Adults need to make sure they emphasize it's important so kids will know it's important. So let's start talking about some ways to incentivize kids to do well. Remember, if you've listened to any of my podcasts before and I talk about rules and policy, the mantra still remains performance dictates opportunity. Lack of performances create consequences. And so it's very important you keep that in mind when you look at incentivizing students to perform well on something you expect them to be able to do. So performance dictates opportunity, lack of performance creates consequences, and that's a key thing to keep in mind. So here's a first incentive to make sure it happens. I would put this on students' high school transcripts, how they perform on this test. It is part of their educational record. It is a state test or a national test. Having this on their transcript says that we think it's important. It's part of their educational merit that we put onto a transcript. So being on a transcript is important. So everybody knows that we believe it's important enough that when you leave here or you send out your information, they know how you did on it. One of the incentives I like the most in the secondary is in the second semester of a class, when student takes this test, you tell them up front, if you pass this test, which means meet or exceeds, or you get in the top two categories, you cannot fail my class this semester. It is a test out credit, if you will. If you pass that test, you will not fail this course. Now, the teacher may give you a credit or they may give you a regular grade. That's up to the teacher's discretion. But if you pass the state standardized test we've been preparing you for, you're not going to flunk this class. The next incentive I like is if you pass the state assessment, meet or exceed or get in the top two categories, it can replace you having to take the final exam. In other words, it excuses you from having to do a final exam in the class if you've passed the state standardized test, which means that you take the exam only if you want to, and you take it only based on it can help your grade, not hurt your grade. So the student has a choice of do I take it or not take it, only to help me if you pass the exam. That's a great trade-off. It incentivizes the kid to do well, and it gives them some control over what their final grade in a class will be like. I really like this one. This next one is a little more out of the box for folks, but I like using it as test-out credit, and I'll give you some examples. Again, if you pass the test, you can't fail this course. I also like it where if you take, for example, an ACT, if I get an 18, which is considered generally to be the passing level in a subject area on the ACT, that's the 50th percentile on an ACT, a student could use that as test out credit. So if I got an 18 in English, that would give me a half credit I could use to replace something I'd failed before. I love this example of using a state standardized test to show performance on something, because performance dictates opportunity. If you use an SAT, the score is 970. But if I score a 970 in math on an SAT, it could make up for a half math credit that I'm missing. So using it as test out credit is really valuable, especially to juniors and seniors who may be struggling with not having enough credits. It's a great example of giving them performance for their opportunity they created. The next example is using their proficiency on test to maintain their athletic eligibility. If they meet or exceed or get a 3 or 4 on the test, if they get the top two high scores, they can keep their athletic eligibility. Again, this is a very small group of kids, but again, there is a very small group of kids who are skewing your scores. It isn't a mass group of kids. It's a small set of kids who skew your scores dramatically. And if you can stop that skew, it will help your overall performance greatly. Here's an example that I had an 8th grade English teacher do. She required book reports of her students each quarter. And so she told her students that anybody who meets or exceeds on our state test, that they don't have to do a book report in the last quarter of the year. It seems like a small incentive, but again, it's that small group of kids you're trying to incentivize. You're always going to have the kid who wants to do 3 more book reports than they need. That's not who you're trying to reach. But it's another good example of the teacher making a statement about the importance of the test and how they want them to perform on it, because it does make a difference to all of us. I hope some of these ideas resonated with you and you got some good ideas of things to try. I certainly would be interested in other ideas that folks have, but it's testing season, so let's get out there and put our best foot forward and help motivate kids to do the best they can for themselves and for us. Thanks for listening. This is Mark Westerberg on episode 28 of School Improvement.